Hello, friends. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington, on 1150 AM just outside Seattle in the United States. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, and metaphysics for the coming years and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. I guarantee we will have only the best psychic astrologers and UFO people on our program, and I'm sure you'll find it the most interesting program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will not hear elsewhere. We are one of the top-rated talk show programs in the Seattle area, and we are also the fastest-growing psychic and metaphysical radio program in the world with listeners in over 60 countries. The purpose of my show is to raise human consciousness to make this world a better place to live. And with everyone's help, I know we can make this planet a much better and much happier place. Today, we've got two very special guests on. Sharon Rose, she's on the phone now. Wonderful Hollywood producer who's just produced a film called The Last Avatar. We'll be talking about that in a few minutes. During the second hour, we'll be going live to Tokyo, Japan to talk to one of the world's best and most famous spiritual healers, a gentleman named Ray Chandran, in Tokyo. And I can't wait to talk to Ray on the phone. It should be just a wonderful interview. Before we go on to our guests, I'd just like to thank everyone who supported this program. We are entirely supported by donations, and if you'd like to donate, please go to our program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com, and there's a little donate button. Just click on it. Also, I wanted to tell people about the wonderful Galactic Alliance, Galactic Wisdom Conference we're having in Gig Harbor, Washington, from March 6th to the 8th, 2015. It's located only 10 to 15 minutes from Tacoma, Washington, and the Inn at Gig Harbor has a wonderful, modern, and clean ballroom with an excellent restaurant and even a hot tub. And next door, for those who get thirsty, there's even a whiskey distillery who are interested in spirits. For more information, please go to our website at www.galacticwisdomconference.com. I have had a couple of reports recently of people who've called to try to make reservations for the conference at the Inn, and they've been told that the rooms are all, that they're all booked up. Well, they're all booked up for our conference. So just be sure to tell them when you book your reservation at the Inn at Gig Harbor to just tell them you're attending the conference, and they will give you a room at a discounted rate. And before I begin, I'd also like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website and providing hours and hours and hours of volunteer work in creating the website. Also, my friend Ann Nelson, business professor at Walla Walla College. My dear friend Michiko Hayashi of the Moto Peace Project in Tokyo, Japan, who's been giving some wonderful suggestions on the program. And, of course, my angelic and earthly family, as well as my wonderful sound engineer, Eric Ryder, and my station manager, Eric Krema, without whose help and support this program would not have been possible. You can always listen to the show live from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., Pacific Standard Time at www.1150kknw.com. And after the show, you can always listen to the show in our archives at www.outofthisworld1150.com and clicking on any one of our wonderful guests. You can also follow us on Twitter at Ted Marr, OTW Radio, and on Facebook at Out of This World Radio. For those who'd like to ask questions during the show, we'll be taking questions at the bottom of the hour. Our direct studio line here in Bellevue, Washington is 425-373-5527, or within Western Washington, our toll-free number is 1-888-298-5569. I also have some good news. At the beginning of next month, I will be co-hosting a radio program with Dr. Lorraine Hurley out of Boston. Her show is syndicated throughout the United States and Canada on the Genesis Communications Network, and for those who are interested, I'll be giving more details about that later, but I'm very excited about that. Sharon, are you there?
I am certainly here.
Great. I printed off your biography, and it's 4 pages single space. I could read the rest of it for the next half hour if you like, or 40 minutes.
No.
I think that would be a bit long, but I'll...
You know, you live long enough, you have a long bio.
Well, that's true. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll keep this short. Sharon Rose is a true Renaissance woman, a filmmaker, choreography, composer, author, teacher, and performer. She has spent the last 30 years working in the fields of education and the esoteric arts to investigate and integrate and impart the knowledge and wisdom of ancient and traditional cultures throughout the world. In the realm of filmmaking, she's the writer-director of documentary films 2012, The Odyssey, and Time Wave 2013. Executive producer of the feature documentary Infinity, The Ultimate Trip, creator of the instructional film Yoga of Light, and producer of the Sacred Mysteries DVD collection. Since 2000, she's been president of the worldwide DVD distribution company, Sacred Mysteries Distribution, which has most recently created the YouTube site Sacred Mysteries TV. She's also author of the award-winning book, The Path of the Priestess, a guidebook for awakening the divine feminine, and contributing author to the book The Mystery of 2012. A former consultant to the National Endowment for the Arts, she has performed and taught museums, universities, and for cultural organizations worldwide. And as I talked to Sharon yesterday, I remember meeting you, Sharon, in 1986 when we were both on Fulbright grants in New Delhi, India.
Yes, it was wonderful. It was wonderful to be in India. It altered my life totally.
Absolutely. And that's actually my time in India. I was there for about 2.5 years studying law in India, and it completely changed my worldview with respect to karma and reincarnation and spiritual topics. And I'm sure it had the same wonderful effect upon you, too.
Well, as a female who grew up in the arts world here, my parents wanted me to go to Broadway. Mm-hmm. I ended up with modern dance in New York. And also being part of the feminist movement in the late 60s, early 70s, to have the incredible opportunity to go to India and live with a living legend of North Indian classical dance, and as well as a tantrika, to really imbibe, get direct transmission of the knowledge of the feminine, the knowledge of the Vedas, the knowledge of beyond that, even into the Sufi tradition, was an extraordinary, life-changing experience for me.
Amazing. For those who are not familiar with Vedas, they're the ancient Hindu texts, I believe, of the ancient Hindu religion. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. Well, Sharon, you've come out with a wonderful new film. It's called The Last Avatar, and I have seen it. The film's amazing. One of the things that stuck in my mind from previewing the film is that basically you can create any kind of world you want, any kind of life you want. We have that power as powerful spiritual beings.
Yes. We've been making my husband Jay Widener and myself started Sacred Mysteries in 2000, and it began with films with Alex Gray, who is a visionary artist, with myself doing one called Yoga of Light, with Alberto Biolgo, the shaman healer, healing the luminous body, films about alchemy, metaphysics, shamanism, and over the years, we've gone very deeply into these esoteric topics, and we got to the point where we really wanted to make a feature film. Mm-hmm. And one, because we built our niche audience. And so we decided to make a film that would cross many generations. Well, he likes to talk about it like this. He says that 2001 was the film that kind of awakened my generation. Mm-hmm. Then The Matrix was the one for the Gen Xers. Mm-hmm. And then The Last Avatar is for the millennials. So we created it to go cross-cultural. And also it has many, many themes that are extremely relevant to what is going on right now in the world, what we call the awakening.
Fascinating, fascinating. I know that there's, I think, seven themes in the film. Sharon, is that right?
Seven major themes. So one is the archons, which is a Gnostic concept. You know, so many of us that are on the path of awakening, once things start to shift in you, once, from the Indian perspective, we could say the third eye opens. Once we really start to see, wonder if all of the darkness and all of the confusion around us is the kind of world we really want to be in, mm-hmm. then we start to look for models and symbols in all kinds of history and tradition. And the one that we found is called the Archons. Mm. The Archons come out of the Gnostic early Christian tradition. And the Archons are psychic parasites that came about 6,000 years ago and embed themselves in our psyches. The Archons lust after greed, torture, pain, war. And they, so psychically, they try to invade us and invade our whole society and its consciousness. And so what we see too often these days are films in the mainstream that are dealing with these subjects. We create films that are there to inspire, enlighten. We're not afraid to bring up these subjects. So the Archons is one of the themes. We bring that forth as a way of looking at, as a model, metaphor, for the darkness that constantly seems to want to invade us and overpower us. So that's one. There's Kalki. The movie is about the last avatar. The word avatar actually comes out of the Hindu tradition. Vishnu is the preserver. He's out of the three main deities on the male side. What's cool about the Indian is they all have female consorts. Vishnu is there to care for the earth. And so what happens is that whenever there's serious problems, he takes an avatar. He becomes embodied. He comes down to the earth. And the last one was the Buddha. The one before that was Krishna. And the final one of this whole age, and I know a lot about this from our 2012 work, is Kalki. And what he does, he comes to destroy all the illusions, to wake us up, and also bring on the bliss of the goddess, really, of the feminine, of life, of nurturing, of beauty, of grace, incredible power for each and every one of us. He comes to let us know who we really are beyond all of the messaging that is coming at us, all of the imprinting from when we were very early on, and the fear-based messaging, the confusion that we have. It comes to give us the sense of self-empowerment and show us that each of us is extremely gifted.
Each of us, I think it's safe to say, it's certainly good. Good to say that we are unique. Each of us in the universe. And you think about that. There's no one else like you in the universe, Sharon. There's no one else like me. And you think of each person is an individual, but we are all also powerful, powerful spiritual beings. And I think that we can certainly create. The powerful message of your film is that we can create the kind of wonderful world that we want. And
exactly.
And this follows, of course. There's a famous scientist who passed away in October, Dr. Masaru Emoto, in Tokyo. He died here a few months ago, but a wonderful man. There's a wonderful peace project that they have out of Tokyo, and his whole research was on how people's thoughts affect their third dimensional reality. But
we did a very early on, like about 2003, we did a DVD with Jonathan Goldman, the sound healer. And within that video is a whole those Emoto's the work that he did. So you're seeing the different effects of consciousness, of words, onto water. So I've been wearing it for a long time, and all of our work has been really focused on assisting people in discovering who they are, who they really are, the light that exists within them.
Fascinating. Very, very profound. Thank you so much for sharing that and for making this movie, too.
Thank you.
There are some quotes at the end of the movie I'd like to read here. They're very profound. Here's one. Everything in the universe has a field around it. This field is called a light body, all that is. And each of us have the ability to affect this light body, this vibration. And that's the secret. And when you realize that you can create your own reality, we become very powerful beings. And we can get out of this dimension and practically solve anything. and help with I think virtually any problem.
Yes, well, we want to inspire intuition, mm-hmm. creativity, going outside of the box. Mm-hmm. The movie is very outside of the box.
Yeah,
it's really about a young Hollywood filmmaker mm-hmm. who his life is totally falling apart. And he decides that he's going to hike the Pacific Crest Trail to try to find out who he is. Now, he's a metaphor for each and every one of us.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, he meets a group of psychics mm-hmm. who are living in, of course, Mount Shasta mm-hmm. and waiting for the fulfillment of the prophecy of Kalki. Now, they've been trained in what we call the dream time, mm-hmm. these other dimensions of dream and vision, to be waiting for him and to recognize him. Mm-hmm. And so the story begins with that recognition. At the same time, Lord Archon, head of the Archons, these guys mm-hmm. that want to stop all this, is trying to find him and destroy him because he knows that if Kalki really comes forth and brings his message of awakening, mm-hmm. then his time will be over.
That's the guy in the black chauffeured Cadillac, I think, in the movie?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, okay.
The one right. that's saying, what I found so interesting, yeah. we started working on this years ago,
uh-huh.
but one of his lines is about how the human race is too stupid to be awakened.
Oh, interesting.
And then wow. how many months ago we were hearing about Jonathan Gruber mm-hmm. saying about how the Americans are so stupid they had to deceptive things to pass Obamacare.
Yeah,
so more and
terrible.
More we're finding that the themes in our film, the messages in our film are starting to reflect an outer world reality now.
Oh. Absolutely. Sharon, I want to tell you something very interesting and very wonderful. The light in this studio has gotten noticeably much, much brighter. We haven't touched the lighting here. It's a gray, cloudy day here in Seattle. But inside the studio here, as you've been talking, it has gotten much, much brighter. And I know that we're getting some help from my angelic friends from high above.
Oh, they're all around.
Mm-hmm.
They're all around. They're just waiting for us
Absolutely.
To call upon them. It's a very important time right now. It's an extraordinary time. We, as human beings, I believe that those beings mm-hmm. are here now. There's a quickening.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, in your life, in my life, it's getting wild. There's a quickening that is part and parcel of this awakening where we are all starting to open our eyes.
Mm-hmm.
To the truth of who we are and what we're capable of.
Well, I have
truth.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Sharon. I want to give this example. I know my listeners have heard it before, but when I had Dr. Emoto on my show last year on July 25th, we were talking about his water experiments, and I said to him, well, would these same intentions of love and gratitude would that also work to help with world peace? And he said, most certainly it should work. So I spontaneously suggested that we send love and light to the Palestinians and to the Israelis who were fighting at the time in the Gaza Strip. So at about 3:30 p.m., I took a minute or two and I asked Dr. Emoto and I, and he and I asked all my listeners around the world and, of course, North America and everywhere to please send love and light to the Palestinians and the Israelis. Well, the show finished up at about 4 o'clock Seattle time, and then I got to where I was staying at about 8:30, and I usually don't turn on CNN, but then I wanted to just curious to see what the news was. Just at that moment, the Israelis and the Palestinians had just spontaneously decided on a 12-hour ceasefire taking place at 9 p.m. Seattle time that night to exchange prisoners and provide food and medical supplies to the wounded. And I thought, oh, it works. So I know we've got tremendous spiritual power. And, you know, if you carry that thought one step further, if since we have these tremendous spiritual powers, what if, for example, instead of sending billions and billions and billions of aid to military aid to the Middle East to try to quell tensions there, we instead sent thoughts of peace and harmony to them so that they could perhaps get along better, and perhaps that would be a better way and cheaper way than sending all this money and military hardware to the Middle East.
Well, this is a subject very close to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I'm born into a Jewish family.
Mm-hmm.
And all my life, I've been searching for the commonalities in tradition, mm-hmm. not what drives us apart. Mm-hmm. For years, I had a dance and music partner mm-hmm. in New York, Ramzi, who was Lebanese, and mm-hmm. we celebrated our commonalities, mm-hmm. and we celebrated the beauty of what happens when we connect all these different cultures, all these different religions, and what we have in common as human beings, rather than all this divisiveness.
Right.
So I just encourage everyone right now, all of you who are waking up, wake up and see the beauty. Look in the eyes of your friends and your family and your parents and see they're just waiting. They're mm-hmm. waiting for happiness and joy to return mm-hmm. and true communication from heart to heart.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'd like to take a minute or two, if I could, Sharon, and send some love and light to everyone in the Middle East, so that they can live a more harmonious life. And because I think if people given a choice, Sharon, they don't want to fight for the rest of their lives. And I think inherently the human nature is a loving benevolent nature. We are inherently good entities.
I totally agree with you. That's why the Archon theory seems as something alien had us embedded mm-hmm. itself in us. It's mm-hmm. time for us. Now, this before we do the meditation, which I totally want to do,
mm-hmm.
I think that we should think about the fact that these beings, these archons or demons, whatever you want to call them, mm-hmm. that are pushing all this suffering on us, they too are waiting for love. We cannot fight them. All we can do is love mm-hmm. them. And that's also, once they really understand the love, mm-hmm. then that aspect of them will dissolve. And that's also one of the messages of the movie.
What a beautiful thing. What a beautiful thing. I know I've had another gentleman on my show several times named Scott Limriel. He's written a book called The Savior's Agenda. It's a fascinating book, Sharon, and it's based on information he's obtained from his friends in the Galactic Alliance, which is it's an alliance of 435 million planets, approximately 7 trillion entities, all benevolent, mostly human, not all, but mostly human, all very, very highly spiritually evolved, and they've been here trying to help us. And they said that there is a major transformation undergoing on the planet right now, where evil as an experiment is ending. And if anything, there's been a lot of negative influences on this planet, but those influences now are slowly being removed, so that we can become a much happier and a much better place to live. Nostradamus back in the 16th century said that by the 2030s and 2040s, the entire planet would undergo a spiritual revolution, in which case we would have a thousand years of peace and spiritual evolvement, after which we would become a spacefaring a species, much like in Star Trek. And I think those times are coming sooner even than the Nostradamus envisioned way back in the 16th century. But slowly but surely, the planet's getting to be a better place, and that's why your film is so important, and that's why I try to make my show as enlightening as possible to people, to try to raise consciousness and make this planet a better place.
That's wonderful. Yeah. That's wonderful of you. I want to tell everyone, if they want to see the trailer for the movie, mm-hmm. go to thelastavatarmovie.com. Mm-hmm. So you need The Last Avatar Movie. Otherwise, you end up with The Last Airbender.
Okay. All right. Good. Well, let's spend a minute or two. Just I want everyone around the world to send love and light to all the peoples in the Middle East and around the world, for that matter, because I know there's other conflicts elsewhere in the world, so that we can have a happier, much better planet. I know this technique works. It worked back on July 25th for Dr. Emoto in stopping the fighting among the Palestinians and the Israelis in the Gaza Strip. And why not try it now? So just for a minute or two, I'd like everyone to send love and light around the world for a better, more peaceful, happier planet. The studio is getting lighter again. There's more bright light coming in again. It's very nice. It's almost like somebody flipped on another light switch in here. Wonderful. Thank you, everyone, for doing that. Sharon, you have other themes in your in the movie as well. You talk about prophecy, spirit, and the dream time, geometry and the sacred, awakening the divine feminine, the origin of the Lemurian legend, yoga of light, and Kalki and the new avatarism. I know that's a lot to say in 25 words or less, but I'd love if you would like to discuss any one of those.
Oh, I'd love to. First, I want to say, in relation to your meditation, mm-hmm. for all the Jews out there, mm-hmm. Shalom Aleichem, may peace be with you. For all the Arabs, Salam Aleikum, may peace be with you.
Nice. I have listeners in Tel Aviv, throughout Israel, as well as in Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and other countries in the Middle East who I know are listening to the program now on the Internet. So that's nice of you to say. For those who, by the way, who are just tuning in, this is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. We're having a fascinating discussion with Sharon Rose, who's directed and produced and acted in a wonderful new movie called The Last Avatar. Go ahead, Sharon. I'd love to hear your yes on the other
thing. Well, for you Seattle people, you mm-hmm. may remember my husband, Jay Widener, who had Mind Over Matters on NPR in the 90s, which really opened the world of metaphysics. Mm. And he wrote and directed the movie I produced.
Fantastic.
And
wow.
it's quite interesting to work 24/7 with your partner. Mm. When we began the movie, mm-hmm. and this happens to everybody, I don't know if you notice that sometimes when you start to wake up, you start to connect with deeper spiritual mm-hmm. teaching, that you go through kind of an aha moment, and then all of a sudden, like all of your problems start coming at you, that like challenge you for mm-hmm. staying in that. Mm-hmm. And so it was really the whole experience of making the movie was quite a wake-up call for every person involved. And particularly, I want to mention our female star, mm-hmm. 80, who also wrote the music. Mm-hmm. And the music, she's 30 years old. Her music is kind of like a Tori Amos. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful music. Mm-hmm. And also during the course of the film, she and the lead actor, Alexander Polinsky, fell in love. So what you're seeing in the movie is the actual real connection between people.
Oh, fantastic. That's amazing.
Yeah. And then we were really fortunate to get Neil Donald Walsh. Mm-hmm. playing Count Saint Germain, the legendary alchemist. Neil was a treasure to work with, and he is kind of the Obi-Wan Kenobi character. But you wanted to hear about these themes, so I think I'll talk a little about the dream time.
Okay.
The dream time, I first understood, you know, we think, oh, the dream time is when you go to sleep. Mm-hmm. But I first began to understand a much deeper experience of the dream time when I met my Tibetan teacher, Namkhai Norbu, that was 30 years ago. And we do what's called dream yoga. And so that every aspect of your life, you can be awake. So there's the waking dream. There's the experiences of your life, the waking dream. There's where your mind goes when you're having visions. There is the sleeping dream. There's mm-hmm. the dream when you die. There's the dream when you're born. Mm-hmm. And your consciousness stays. What we're doing in these teachings, in this dream yoga, is so that you wake up in the dream. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in your dream state at night, you will be able to, if someone's attacking you, you actually see it and realize and can counter it. So the dream becomes the mechanism for shifting your waking reality as well. Mm-hmm. So the dream time is not just the dream. It's the full dream that we have in this life and beyond with mm-hmm. our karma. Mm-hmm. And so the teachings in the dream time, you can interact with higher vibrational beings, even with lower vibrational. You can interact with way, way beyond what you can in our 3D reality.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Well, I know that for the over 20 years now, I've been in touch with the other side and my guardian angels, and I know it's much easier for them to come to us in a dreamtime state. They communicate from the fifth and higher dimensions in terms of thought, and it's much easier for them to come to us in a dream state.
Well, that's because we're not in a body,
right.
And we have the ability to go through walls. We have the ability to do all kinds of things mm-hmm. that we don't do in our daily life.
True.
And so that's why we are ability to really, and we do once we understand the use of dream yoga and how mm-hmm. to work with it, mm-hmm. then these beings can also speak with us during our daily life.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. There's another theme in your movie called Awakening the Divine Feminine. I'd love for you to go into that, by the way. I mean, I think...
that's been a major area of research in my entire life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So growing up, I went to college in the 60s, and I got zapped by the whole sexual revolution and the feminist movement.
Mm-hmm.
But what I... And we were really struggling, to find out, discover what it really meant to be a woman.
Mm-hmm.
My problem... I wrote a book called The Path of the Priestess, a guidebook for awakening the divine feminine, which talks about my experiences and then has a lot of tools, exercises for particularly women to wake up to their true power.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been an area I've been really looking into forever, and the women in the movie are all very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And the two young women in particular are just beautiful. Monique mm-hmm. Trinity Rose is an extraordinary, outside of this role, dancer mm-hmm. that has a place called the Dakini Rose Garden in Talent, Oregon. So the divine feminine, So what I found when I started really contemplating this was that it seemed that the feminist movement was pushing us to want to be like men,
mm-hmm.
to right. not to understand and remember the true amazing power over centuries we had as women, as healers, as keepers of the dream time, as in the world of politics, we were always mediators.
Mm-hmm.
The women were the ones who were in charge of the rights of sexuality, of death, of birth.
Mm-hmm.
And so mm-hmm. much of that it's coming back, but understanding of that has disappeared. So when I went to India to live with my teachers, Dada Devi, a whole new world opened for me because mm-hmm. it was a tradition of embodying deity as a dancer, mm-hmm. actor,
mm-hmm.
singer. It was funny because my childhood learning to go to Broadway
mm-hmm.
really was like now I had come into what I would call a spiritual Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of embodying fairies and these kinds of things from the Western tradition, I was now embodying these amazingly powerful goddesses.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Each one of them with so great of teachings about the power, the beauty, the grace, the majesty of what it is to be in a female body.
Mm-hmm. And I have to ask you this question too. For men, I think too, it also means would it be correct to say that you say awakening the divine feminine, that also applies to men too? And if you think of it.
Oh my God, of course.
Yeah. So
well,
we're
all essentially, we have male and female within. Just some of us are in these female bodies and some are in male bodies.
But it also, I think, yeah, but I also think it may refer to the intuitive powers a person has as well, doesn't it? I mean,
oh, for sure.
You know,
for sure.
You know.
One of the things, the key themes in my book has to do with what I call the psychic energetic landscape
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
how women throughout centuries were the keepers of that. We were able to travel into those worlds of dream and vision and bring back fresh insight. Now, it doesn't mean that men are unable to do that, too. It's just that in many cultures, the men were more the kind of keepers of the 3D world.
Right.
Kept the women safe, where the women were able to, except for that they were male shamans, of course, and seers. But the women really held that. And the men, the warriors, would come, you know, to the sibyls, et cetera,
right.
in the Western, to be given prophecy.
Well, my background's a little different because I come from a psychic family. I was trained by my wonderful foster mother how to contact the other side. So I've developed my intuitive abilities and psychic abilities for over 20 years now, and I've advanced 20 spiritual lifetimes during that time. So now I can do remote viewing. I can see auras. I can see into the future. I can do readings with accuracies of 90% to 100%. But I think all of us, men included, we all have the abilities within us to develop those intuitive powers. And I'll never forget the time my foster mother did a reading for me way back in 1994, 21 years ago. I walked her into the living room, and she told me everything that was on my mind, and not only that, the kinds of questions I was going to ask and all the answers, things that she would have had no way of knowing. And when you go to a good psychic, they can tap into the fifth dimension using their intuitive. And if you'd like to call it, you can call it the divine feminine within all of us, including men, to get the answers that people need to do what they should do in their lives from their guardian angels and spirit guides. So, but this theme in your film is very, very important, and I want to thank you so much for including that in your film, Sharon.
It's included in everything I do. When we did our 2012. That was an extraordinary experience for me because I met the Carol shamans of Peru, and I met all the people. So this was about 2005. We were living in Seattle then. Mm-hmm. And we met these people who had been really looking at the future.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to do this film because we knew that the mainstream would take 2012 and turn it into another end of the world.
Okay.
And like in everything we do, we wanted to bring as many facts as we could and as many perceptions as we could, but help assist in people seeing their own potential, that it doesn't have to be the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
That if we wake up, then amazing things can happen. Our creativity, I just feel that there's too much of this. How would you describe it? It's like a burying of the creative intuition of each person in our schools and universities, rather than a celebration of the magic that's inherent in each individual.
Well, I have to tell you, recently I had two world-famous professors on my show, Rupert Sheldrake from London, as well as Professor Jerry Pollack from the University of Washington. And during those interviews, I had a psychic on. I had a psychic on immediately following Jerry Pollack's interview, and also during Rupert Sheldrake's interview, Albert Einstein's spirit came through. And he said he was helping both of them, and he thanked them for their wonderful work and said that if they could meditate more, he would help them find the answers in the third dimension that they're seeking. And I thought that was just amazing. But you see, even hard science, and the universities now are changing. I know that, we have yet to have a Department of Psychic Studies in the United States. But in India, if I remember correctly from living there, Sharon, that they have departments of astrological studies, don't they? In many universities in India, it's a standard course.
Well, India, it's India.
Yeah.
So they've been, the Indian culture has been looking at these subjects for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
Also in Russia, they're very much into looking at psychic phenomena and experimenting in that world and acknowledging that world. I'm now working with women in Russia. It's interesting there. About where we were in the early 60s, so I want to assist them in understanding the feminine from this deeply spiritual perspective rather than, you know, let's all go out and become heads of corporations, et cetera.
Fascinating. There's another fascinating theme you had in your movie called The Origin of the Lemurian Legend. Could you please?
The Lemurians, that it's the legend is parallel to the Atlantean legend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Lemurians were living in the Pacific area, mm-hmm. the South Pacific, and they were a very advanced being. Now, what's interesting about it is that in many of the legends, they were not like Native American, or because many of the legends, like their Native Americans came from Tibet, actually. But this is a different. They said that they were white, actually, tall beings.
Mm-hmm.
This might, you know, have some relationship to what they call in the UFO community tall whites, or the crypto terrestrials. But they mm-hmm. were very advanced civilization, and they came across the Pacific all the way into Mount Shasta in California through Hawaii and all of that. And in the lore that we use in the movie, the mythos, was that they had the ability, of course, to see beyond time and into the future, and they saw that things were going to get very difficult. And so they went underground, that they live under the earth in these places like Mount Shasta, or there's also the legend from the Tibetan of Shambhala, mm-hmm. that they live throughout the world, actually, in these magical cities underground.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they still communicate with us. Mm-hmm. They keep the teachings mm-hmm. through the dream time.
Mm.
And so that's one of the mythos in the movie, that they actually connected with the Indian. Actually, in Mount Shasta, there is a whole connection to India. There are these groups that are Indian from India, spiritual groups that live in Mount Shasta as well.
Oh, fascinating. Fascinating. I have to tell you, the photography around Mount Shasta is absolutely beautiful. When you see the film, friends, when you see the film, you'll see all these beautiful mountain pictures and everything. It's quite interesting. A couple of months ago, I had Graham Hancock on the show.
When I met Jay, I was performing mm-hmm. in England on a lecture tour with Richard Hoagland, Graham Hancock, and Robert Babal.
And oh, really?
Romsey and I were brought in to show how the myths and stories of Egypt had been encoded in the art, and that's the way you could discover them. So they wouldn't be lost. They were kind of encoded in the hieroglyphs, in the paintings, and the paintings are just like, they're graphic novels. If you look mm-hmm. at the Egyptian paintings from the perspective of a graphic novel,
mm-hmm.
you see that their rituals are actually embedded, and their teachings, which are incredibly beautiful and mystical, the Egyptian teachings,
mm-hmm.
they're all encoded in the art, and the way to uncover them. Like every hieroglyph, the sound of a hieroglyph,
mm-hmm.
If you look at a hieroglyph, the sound was kind of opening a door to another dimension, just speaking the sound of the glyph or touching the glyph itself.
Fascinating, fascinating. You know that Graham Hancock has, he on his show a couple of months ago when he was on my radio show here, Sharon, he said that he had dived, I think, over 200 times to Yanaguchi, I think that's the name of the ruins. It's off Okinawa, and it's just mm-hmm. there's just pyramids which are at least 10,000 years old. And I wanted to tell our many listeners around the world, too, that the Dr. Emoto's office and the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo is planning a ceremony at that site off of Okinawa, I think the third week in August. If anyone's interested in attending, please send me an email at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, and I'll be happy to provide the details for that. But it's going to be a fascinating time. My next guest on the next hour is a gentleman named Ray Chandran. He's one of the world's most famous and important spiritual healers. And in a recent email I received from him, he said, I was a priest at one time in ancient Atlantis, and my name was Alter Ray. And during that time, this is before things fell apart, that I was my duty and purpose back then was to raise human consciousness. And he said, my radio program now is a continuation of that work, which I stop so many thousands of years ago. And for me, this is a wrapping up of my, if you could say, my soul purpose. So anyway, it's a fascinating discussion of Lemurian and Atlantis. I believe both of those civilizations did exist at one time, but through a lot of cataclysmic changes, much of the evidence of those civilizations are gone, although there are a lot of underwater structures around the world, including the one off Okinawa that Graham Hancock has investigated many, many times.
His work is extraordinary.
Oh, yeah.
It's just getting better and better. And he's such a wonderful man, and his wife, Samta.
Yeah.
Beautiful woman and great photographer.
Well, wonderful people. And I want to thank, Graham, if you're listening, I want to thank you so much for supporting my radio. He's recently sent in a donation to the radio show to keep us on the air, because we're entirely supported by donations, and every little bit helps, even $1 or $5. If you have 1,000, for example, 1,000 people each donated a dollar, that would be $1,000. So it all helps. It really all helps.
Which brings me to about what's happening with the movie.
Oh, yes. Go right ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We are now, in the past, mm-hmm. we've shown our films in hundreds and hundreds of New Thought churches and places like East West Books in Seattle, mm-hmm. so books in New Age bookstores, etc. Mm-hmm. And those are starting to come in.
Good.
Now we just started the process of soliciting for screening, but we are also
great.
In communication with another company. They're called Tuz, and they are what they call a Kickstarter for filmmakers. It's just such a great model where someone like in Seattle, once we're all connected and hooked up on the web and all that, which will be a few months from now, mm-hmm. Could just say, I want to see The Last Avatar in Seattle or anywhere mm-hmm. in the country. Mm-hmm. And they will hook it up with a theater, like a real, you know, theater.
Nice.
theater.
Nice.
Like a Cinemark.
Mm-hmm.
And so that it's a really incredible grassroots experience. And I love that model. I love that. That's what we've used all along. It's very different. It means that we're able to free to speak our own minds in our films. We don't have people above us saying, you can't say that, you can't do that.
Right.
So right. Once I talked to these people, I was very excited to look, you know, to look together at how we can work together to bring these kinds of empowerment alternative messages to a much larger audience. So if you go to thelastavatarmovie.com, then we'll be putting updates on what's happening with our film.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. I have been in touch with William Arntz, the director, producer of What the Bleep Do We Know, very successful mm-hmm. independent film, who was also, same thing, through donations. And then I had, he'll be coming on my show soon. And then I had, about a month ago, I had Craig Combasso, on his film Stranger at the Pentagon, which was also the funding for that was also done through small donations, and he was just overwhelmed by the in a good way for the public support for it. So
yeah.
I, you know, and any help that I can provide in this program can provide in your efforts to get your funding, just let
me
know.
Well, what I really like about the model that we have is that everybody makes money.
Mm-hmm.
So these centers showing the film, we do a 50-50 split.
Mm-hmm.
This other model that was Tug, that is very interesting because the person actually makes a percentage for setting up the screening.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be that we all create abundance. Our films are there to help do that rather than just this greed model that we have time for that to end.
Sure. Wonderful. 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 Tell me, Sharon, what are your plans for the future as far as other films?
Well, Jay has written a film that's mm-hmm. a psychological thriller.
Mm-hmm.
He is now working, if you've heard of Gaim TV.
Oh, yeah.
He is now directing all their original programming and starting a channel, well, it's going on now, called Seeking Truth at the moment. So all of these kinds of, so this has people like David Wilcock and Graham, all of the people, these people we know, their teachings and work is on Gaim TV. It's incredible. model. They're doing wonderful work. So he's focused there. I have work to do, again, with the Divine Feminine. I have composed and recorded an entire kind of a river dance, choreographed river dance for the Divine Feminine. So once this movie is brought forth and I am finished with that aspect, I will be moving back into there. I also have created Chastity Style, which is a clothing and jewelry line that is associated with the movie. I have particularly the earrings, they're feather earrings, and we wore them for the movie. That was started 4 years ago, and everywhere I went, people wanted them. So I said, okay, let's go there. And I am now working with young at-risk women and young mothers in Crestone, Colorado, who are making these, which gives them a very nice living. They can take the work home. They can do it, you know, in their time, spare time. And I'm really happy about that, too. I just want to be a benefit.
Okay. Wonderful. Well, we talked about this yesterday, Sharon, but I'd love to have your husband, Jay, on my show in a couple of months. I think it'd be a lot of fun to have him anytime he wants. Anytime. we'll have him on then. Great. In a couple of months. And then there's something important I want to bring up with you, too, before I forget. We've got a couple minutes left. We talked about, changing influence in the younger people of this planet to create a generation of people who will make this planet a much better and happier place. And I talked about the Emoto Peace Project. They have a project where I'm working on it now to print and distribute their Emoto Peace Project books to every school and library here in the United States, Canada, and then on to Central and South America. And the theory of their printing is that of the books is that if you teach kids between the ages of 3 and 12 the values of love and gratitude and harmony and getting along with each other, then they're far less likely to get involved in wars in the Middle East when they grow up to be young adults in 15 to 20 years from now. And you had something very interesting where you said that you spent time in dancing on the in your cultural activities on the East Coast for 5 years, but you would teach children to meditate. Could you explain a little bit about that?
Yes, in Queens, they brought me in to teach about India, and the first thing they asked for was meditation. But whenever I went, we went to many schools throughout the East Coast, and the first thing I would use a lot of techniques that I've learned from all of my work in meditation and psychology and all of that. Mm-hmm. So always the first thing is we would go to silence. And then I would take them on a visionary journey for whatever subject or culture we were going to teach about. Mm-hmm. So if it was the Celtic culture, we did a whole thing with fairies and elves and things like that.
Nice.
So we would have them close their eyes and do some deep breathing. And then we would have, I would lead them on a guided meditation where it's like opening up that reality to them.
Oh, wonderful.
And then at the end of that, I would have them draw what they saw and talk about it. We'd all discuss it.
Nice.
And from that introduction, then we would, the teachers would read, and so this would happen over like a whole semester. The teachers would read to them about the culture. The parents came in. They would help them make costumes.
Nice.
And at the end, we'd have a performance. There were some amazing experiences.
Sorry to interrupt, my friend. We're getting close, but I want to give you the last minute. I just want to just tell everyone that they're listening to Out of This World Radio with your host Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW here in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. We're having a fascinating interview with Sharon Rose, director, author, and producer of the wonderful movie The Last Avatar. For those, please stay tuned. I want to give Sharon the floor for the next minute or so to wrap up her wonderful presentation today. Please stay tuned for the next hour for Ray Chandran. He is Japan's. He lives in Japan. He's one of the world's most famous spiritual healers. So please go ahead. We've got about a minute left, Sharon. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Please
so
wrap
there
up.
Was a kid that whose mother had been a crack addict, and he couldn't sit still. And so he must have been about 8 years old. And we came in, that culture was doing Africa, and they made their own drums. This kid took to drumming like a fish to water. He was so good that he had a solo during the performance, and it shifted him, the perceptions, his own self-esteem, but the perceptions of his teachers and the other children about who he was. Like, he had found his gift. Wow. And that's what's so important. And that's the message of the movie.
Wow, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on today, Sharon. I hope you have a wonderful, happy weekend. Please stay tuned for our next hour.